I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited to make it a little bit shorter and a little bit sweeter. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, these and other buzzwords make headlines in the world of finance and increasingly in more regular circles as well. Underlying these cryptocurrencies is a piece of financial technology called blockchain. Touted as a secure and uniquely tamper-proof form of digital bookkeeping, blockchain is often explained as a distributed ledger. Payments, debts, and other transactions are recorded on the ledger, and multiple copies are saved across a decentralized or distributed network. The security in having redundant copies of transactions and the ledger make hacking a blockchain-based network difficult, if not impossible. And that's why blockchain is being promoted as a new secure way to handle everything from record keeping to real estate transactions, contracts, and insurance. And state lawmakers are betting this new technology could be Vermont's next moneymaker, much like the state's captive insurance market. But I will be the first to admit it's very confusing. And in fact, an exact definition of blockchain can even be difficult to pin down. So we are going to try to wade through the murky waters of blockchain, Bitcoin, and cryptocurrency today on Vermont Edition, and why you in Vermont should care if you don't already. Joining me is Jeremy Hansen, Associate Professor of Computer Science at Norwich University in Northfield, where he specializes in cryptography and computer security. He's here to give us the most understandable definitions he possibly can of these things. Welcome back, Jeremy. Nice to have you.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
And also today joining us is Representative Jean O'Sullivan. She lives in Burlington and represents the New North End in the legislature. She has a background in business, and she's now advancing blockchain-focused legislation in the House after it's made its way through the Senate. Representative O'Sullivan, nice to have you with us today as well.
Wonderful to be here. Thank you so much, Jane.
Jeremy Hansen, I tried to explain a little bit, but I'm hoping that you can give us the really good and really clear definition of, first of all, what blockchain is.
Sure. So it is indeed a chain of blocks. It's essentially a way of documenting transactions in such a way that it's very difficult to go back and have anybody argue that any particular transaction has taken place. And the way this works, the metaphor that that I like to use is if you sign a paper contract, I sign a paper contract, you sign a paper contract, we agree to it. What happens with blockchain is that we will then, you and I or someone else, will take that contract that you and I have made that we put out publicly. They will take that and they will sign their own contract. And they will essentially staple that in sort of a mathematical sort of way. They will staple that to our contract. So they will essentially base their contract partially on the earlier contracts that were there. And what happens is, as more and more people participate in this, they create this chain of transactions, this chain of agreements, this chain of blocks that are, it's very difficult then for, if you and I had a contract early on, we would then have to essentially invalidate all of the connection, all of the contracts that came after that were dependent on our contract, and that's essentially impossible. One of the reasons that this is impossible is that there's a copy of our contract that's being shared with every other participant in this system. So anybody that wants to participate in a particular blockchain essentially can download a copy of it, of that ledger, of that essentially stack of contracts stapled together, and they can begin participating. I won't bother going into the math, but it's similar and related to how websites can keep your data secure and to make sure that files haven't changed in transit.
Okay, so that's blockchain, which is the basis for Bitcoin, which we hear a lot about. So describe for us Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies.
Sure. Okay, so I want you to think about blockchain as being like the internet. So it's the underlying tool, it's the underlying enabling technology. And Bitcoin would be like Amazon.com. So Amazon.com is not the internet. Amazon.com uses the internet. So Bitcoin uses a blockchain. It uses a particular kind of blockchain that allows people to essentially exchange these shares of value that we call Bitcoin or Bitcoins. And the way that new Bitcoins are created, it's essentially it's a bunch of computers doing a really challenging puzzle, essentially. So the more computing power that you can put towards solving these puzzles, the more individual Bitcoins you can produce. And then at some point, you know, in the past, people decided that Bitcoins were worth something, and people started creating exchanges for Bitcoins to U.S. dollars or Bitcoins to whatever currency you happen to like. And one of the things that people like about Bitcoin is that it is decentralized, and it's mostly anonymous. So I could exchange a certain number of Bitcoin with someone else for some purchase, and I wouldn't necessarily have to give them my name or my address or my email address or anything really about me. They would essentially see the Bitcoin appear in their wallet. It would land wherever they were looking for it to land, and then they would give me the resource that they agreed to give me.
I want to get you in here on this, Representative O'Sullivan, as well. But just before we do, Jeremy Hansen, clear up one thing, because you just said blockchain is transparent and everyone can see every transaction. So we know, because this is one of the places where Bitcoin has gotten in trouble, that it is often used in this anonymous way that people don't have to reveal their identities to use it. So explain the difference between something being completely transparent and yet also allowing somebody to be anonymous.
Right. So essentially, when I have a contract, when I create one of these transactions with someone else that's Bitcoin, I essentially choose almost a random number. I choose a number that represents me. And that random number, if I have some Bitcoin in that account with that long random number, I say, I'm sending Bitcoin from this random number to your long random number, rather than having that long random number being associated with me. Bitcoin is chosen.
But then you have to get it somehow someday. If you wanted to, for example, change it into U.S. dollars, you'd have to take those that Bitcoin and that number and get it somehow into your actual personal Jeremy Hansen hands.
Yes, yes, and I've done this, in fact. And there are these exchanges, and it's at that point where those exchanges happen, where you're cashing out the Bitcoin and converting it to actual no joke hard currency, where your identity would then, or, you know, could then be determined.
Representative O'Sullivan, you're in the legislature, obviously, but you also have this background as a business owner and a financial consultant. So are cryptocurrencies something that you deal with?
Well, let's bring what Jeremy just said down to what we did in the state. Last year, we realized that cryptocurrencies were part of how we are transacting business in the state. We want to encourage transacting business warehouse commerce. So the Department of Financial Regulation, with Oliver Goodenough from Vermont Law School, who is a genius, I just needed to say that, came to us, and we enacted a law that said that if I'm transferring Bitcoin, if you're Bank A and I want to send you a Bitcoin, which you can now do, Bank A going to Bank B, which is your B, would then send a bit. Well, if it's $100, we go $100, $100 into an escrow account with Bank A with $100. But the challenge was with any cryptocurrency, because the value fluctuates so rapidly, what do they hold in their escrow account? So that was diminishing trade in this area. So we enacted legislation that allowed them to hold like currency. So now we've enabled that legislation. So from all of that really technical underpinnings of what this is, that's how we intersect with that. And so when we go into the current legislation, we can talk about how we intersect with that in the sense of what we just created in the legislation, should it pass, what's called a blockchain LLC. We all know a limited liability corporation shields the top two layers of management from liability from that company. But with blockchain, as Jeremy was talking about, there are other participants who are part of that chain. They then become, so what we then do with our LLC structure is we do the traditional shielding, and then we extend that limited liability shield to the participants, which is a whole new corporate structure, which will hopefully attract businesses to us. At the same time, I want to throw this to Jeremy, because there were some issues within that in terms of artificial intelligence. So it's challenging. It's almost like the Facebook hearings you're hearing now, where we are intersecting with some very deep and interesting and arcane technological issues. So maybe we want to talk a little bit about the functionality that we may or may not have in the blockchain limited liability corp.
Wait, before we do, one of the other things that we've been hearing in these Facebook hearings and yesterday in the Senate, I heard a BBC report this morning that illuminated some of the voices of the senators who appeared perhaps not to be that familiar with the model of Facebook and how it worked. That must be true in the Vermont legislature when it comes to blockchain and Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. I mean, this is not a language that we all speak fluently yet. So it must be a complicated thing for the legislature to try to be contemplating. And in some ways, it's sort of looking ahead to a future that certainly not all of us are there yet. So is it hard? I mean, you sound very fluent in
this
language.
Well, it is, but we've been working on this for a number of years. I mean, this is the new thrust of economic development in the state. We are really trying to become leaders on many levels in the tech fields. And this is one of them, because this is, as Jeremy had said, it's like a new internet.
But are you hedging? I mean, is cryptocurrency really the future, or are you thinking?
Oh, no, cryptocurrency is such a marginal part of the discussion, honestly. What we're talking about is that the ability to trace things all the way back creates a whole other level of business models. There's a company that came in front of us, and they are going to be able to, if you are, the minute you you pluck a leaf from a field, you can trace where that leaf is all the way until it goes into the plate of your customer. And you can do that with blockchain. So there are all these other business models that are occurring with blockchain. Cryptocurrencies are only the sort of the flash that people see. What we're doing is creating models to encourage that type of either business structure or in terms of the personal identifying trust to create, and this is where the captive insurance comes in, we're creating a model where, because we are the gold standard of captive insurances in terms of regulation, we are opening a business model where we can then regulate it, and it will have the same functionality for DFR as captives, and they will have to have an office in the state. And they will pay fees to register, and they will pay fees to be regulated, and that's audited, because it is a benefit to companies to work with us because we are the gold standard.
You just mentioned leaf from a field all the way to your plate. That blockchain could be one way to really secure all of those connections on the way from the field to the plate. And on that, let's go to Mark, who's calling in from Cornwall. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. So, yes, you may have touched on it, but I might have missed it. But I'm a grass-fed beef producer, and I can see how blockchain could be useful for transparency, that to say, you know, to prove I'm doing what I say I'm doing in terms of where the animals are coming from or how long they've been on pasture or et cetera, et cetera. And so, like, that bigger picture I can sort of understand, but the actual application, I sometimes feel like I live in a technological black hole. So, I mean, you know, are there companies that would help me do this, or do I hire, get a Middlebury College student to set this up on my computer? What's the actual application, for a business like mine?
Yeah, Mark, good question. And exactly. How do we take this from this idea phase to, like, how would Mark, as a grass-fed beef producer, use blockchain? Jeremy, I want to bring you back in on this. So to Mark's question, give us an actual concrete idea of how Mark could apply this.
Sure. So again, blockchain is an accounting method. So if you're a farmer, if you're an organic farmer, presumably you do accounting. And this is indeed a way that you can make these transactions and these exchanges and this accounting much more transparent and fairly flexible. Would you just hire a Middlebury grad or a Norwich grad to do this? I don't think so. I think, hopefully we will have a influx of startup companies in Vermont who are interested in bringing their companies here to offer these services because we have this enabling legislation in the pipeline. And then, if there are farmers in Vermont or farmers elsewhere who can contract with a company that uses, a blockchain-based software package to track all of the farm inputs and outputs and everything that happens on the farm.
One of the things, I guess, that confuses me, though, is that we've talked about this a couple times now, that the point is that this is decentralized. But it sounds like we are still creating companies that are sort of being a pass-through or a way to get into the system. So don't these transactions then originate from somewhere? And so there is this point, the starting point, and then it goes to a distributed network? I mean, it still seems like there's sort of a if not a bottleneck that used to be in the form of a bank, still an entry point that could be vulnerable.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on how you build it. I mean, the internet can be built in a secure way. The internet, you know, you can connect to it in an insecure way. It really depends on how you use it. The exact protocol and the exact software that a particular type of blockchain might use isn't limited to the way that the Bitcoin blockchain works. You know, this notion of anonymity or lack of control over transactions. There may be some, you know, less decentralized blockchains out there. There might be some that do look more like Bitcoin. There could be some that are fully centralized, in fact, and early decentralized in the sense of software and hardware behind the scenes or out in the cloud. And used more as the decentralization is used more as a resilience rather than everybody in the world has their own copy of it. But it could be also that there are a number of companies that work together and they share a blockchain to not only monitor and document farm inputs and outputs, but also land records, which is the usual. Number one application that people talk about when they talk about something other than Bitcoin building things on the blockchain.
Representative O'Sullivan, I wanted to make sure you got a chance to jump in here because we're talking about these applications.
And the application, Mark was spot on talking about being able to trace all of the where all of his organic beef comes from. It's brilliant. That's exactly what we're looking for because that helps our farmers and our agriculture, which is what we do. The other thing is in South Burlington, they've already just recorded their very first land transaction on blockchain. And currently there's a company that is paralleling all of their land transactions for a year in terms of modeling whether you can put all of your land transactions on blockchain as an alternative way of storing your records. Every clerk in the state is just choking over archiving
so
all of the
records.
For
example, when I bought my house, we have to go do a record search to make sure that we have the deed all the way through so we know this record of transactions from who owned the house and sold it to whom on until I get it. So instead of doing that at the town clerk's office, you're saying you'd be able to do it on blockchain.
Yes. Well, the town clerk would have access to blockchain, and that would be the methodology they would do for storing the contents of those archives. And in the legislation, we're discussing with the Vermont League of Cities and Towns that enabling legislation to say you may hold your records in these formats and electronically, and giving them an opportunity. Many of them have resorted to microfiche, but it's really too much. So what I'm trying to say is this is kind of the mundane aspect of this really high in the sky, amazing technology that's there. What it comes down to from our commercial side is how do we apply it to the state? How do we make money? We bring tech companies in. Those tech companies hire people. Those tech companies interact with our kids and keep our kids here because they've got great salaries and they've got a great possible future. That's how we do it. And I'm going to do my pitch for Springfield. Springfield, Vermont has the same connectivity that Burlington, Vermont has because of VTEL. Springfield, Vermont has amazing capacity for all of those buildings that used to have the tool and die industry. They are great for storage and what we're looking for in the internet.
You mean like server storage?
Server storage. This is me being a commerce person, but I'm just more concrete. That being said, when we were having testimony on blockchain, the entrepreneurial people who were talking to us were then going down to Springfield because that's an ideal place to locate. Wouldn't that be brilliant? And they've got Matt Dunn. Matt Dunn, who worked for Google, was the person who said to me, you know what, with those automotive tech programs, you know who does really well on 3D computer-aided design? The same person who does automotive tech. They think in 3D. That's what the future for Vermont. That's the future for our kids. That's how we keep kids in Vermont. We are a graying state. We need kids. That's what blockchain does.
Hmm. Let's get another question in here from a listener, and we can tease out some more of these ideas as well. Emily's calling in from Heartland. Hi, Emily. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question, Jane. And I'm really thankful that you're doing this program right now. First of all, I do want to comment that we do need to be very careful about 5G. It's got health problems. But my question is, can we use blockchain, and why can't we, to transform our political system so that we have more involvement by regular people and sort of to give a liquid democratic type implementation of democracy and to give politics the honorability that it, frankly, right now doesn't have?
Emily, how do you see blockchain contributing to that?
Well, we could have people voting on issues through blockchain, or we could have them assigning their vote in real time to a representative, a proxy vote, or taking it back. So we can, instead of waiting for these sort of dog and pony shows where people who are running only get 2 minutes to answer a very deep problem in our debates, we could have people making proposals and voting on them, and, you know, we could totally transform our democracy to a true democracy through the internet. And I believe there's a lot of people who are wondering why we aren't. Is it because we have people who are now in control who will not cede control to give it back to the people?
Well, some of this is so new. And Jeremy Hansen, what do you think? You're not in politics, so we'll leave Representative O'Sullivan out of it for a moment. And just, you know, what do you think about Emily's ideas?
I actually am in politics. I'm a
You are in politics. Darn it!
But so no. This is a great one. This is one of the other things I dabble in. I'm familiar. There's a software package out of Germany. The German Pirate Party created something called Liquid Feedback that allows for liquid democracy and horizontal decision making. So that's something I'm very interested in. I'm not familiar with anything with any of these packages that use blockchain, but because it's public, because it's decentralized, and because everybody can be an easy participant into it, I think it does make a lot of sense. What exactly that looks like, I'm not sure. But no, I'm optimistic, like Emily is, that's another interesting application, using this for public discourse, public decision making, and voting. I don't want to call it voting necessarily, but consensus finding, we'll call it that.
Well, could there be voting? I mean, is there a way to shore up sort of electoral systems using blockchain? Although then we again get into this question of who knows what and the transparency piece of this. And, are, you know, are we using numbers versus names? But is there a way that you see, Jeremy Hansen?
So yes, the answer is yes, but I think that there's a lot of easier solutions to fixing the way that we do voting. So something else that I do research in is something called computational social choice, which is how we collectively make decisions. And changing from our plurality voting system to something like instant runoff or approval voting, and any of the other systems that are out there are better than what we have right now. I don't think that we need to go to something quite as complex as blockchain for our current decision-making process, but maybe conceivably down the line, that's something that we could, maybe could pilot at some local level for, decision-making at maybe town meeting in 2025.
Gina Sullivan?
In Burlington, we did pilot instant runoff, voting twice, and mathematically, it did not work out so well. So this is my pitch for vote participation. We're in Vermont. There are give or take 630,000 of us in the entire state. Let's talk to our neighbors. Go to your town meetings. If you have a neighborhood planning assembly, go to it. Talk to people. Go on your front porch forum. It's low tech, but it's talking to each other. It's getting out and interacting with your fellow residents and voting. The turnout in Vermont is abysmal. We can do early voting. And you don't have to be highly technical. It's a paper ballot. It's okay. But that's what we need to do first and foremost. I appreciate everything that Jeremy's saying. It's fascinating. I've not necessarily put the end to instant runoff voting for me, but it did not work out.
So blockchain is not the answer for every situation.
No,
but could there be something like we talk a lot about electronic health records? Could those be on a blockchain?
Absolutely, that's a perfect application for it. It's brilliant, and so the larger applications are wonderful. But we're from the economic development standpoint. We in commerce in this bill is aimed at a much smaller but burgeoning population. And that's it's pushing the envelope to really bring tech companies in. One of the things that's interesting is because of the privacy regulations that are going in the EU, we may actually be bringing people over for that blockchain LLC from all over the world. I mean, people from Sweden are reaching out to Plattsburgh to see if they can start a Bitcoin mining business there, which they had to put a kibosh on because they have Niagara Power, so it's very cheap.
Right, because Bitcoin mining takes a lot of power.
Massive
because these servers
energy.
Are running and running and running, and Plattsburgh was finding it was drawing down too much power.
And that's one of the issues around blockchain in terms of the open versus the closed. The type of blockchain architecture we're talking about are closed, and they're not the kind of things that are sucking all of that energy up. The Bitcoin mining is exactly what you were saying.
So, Jeremy Hansen, if you know, 10, 15 years from now, I suddenly wake up from a very long nap, is the world going to look different to me? Is Vermont going to look different because of blockchain? If I don't have computer and internet access all the time, am I left out of this new economy? Explain to me how you see this sort of featuring in my world in the future.
Yeah, I guess I'm not so sure that it will change much for the average person who's not, you know, deeply involved in software. It's going to make things easier. I mean, in the same sense as, you know, we're looking at the applications we use. We're not too terribly concerned, except in a handful of circumstances, you know, about exactly how our bits and bytes get out to the internet and communicate with other people out there. So having internet access is important. Having fast internet access is important. But exactly the mechanisms behind the scene, I'm not so sure that they're important. So we will see new applications. We will see better applications that have blockchain back behind the scenes and doing good things. But I think for the most part, it's not going to have any sort of direct effect on the average Vermonter.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, and I look forward to having more conversations with both of you as we progress in this, and certainly to seeing what kind of legislation moves forward in addition to legislation that's already been passed. Representative Gene O'Sullivan lives in Burlington and represents the New North End. Thank you very much for talking blockchain with us today.
Oh, thank you, Jane. I really enjoyed it, and I'm just so glad you're looking at this. It's an exciting area.
Well, it's very interesting. And Jeremy Hansen, Associate Professor of Computer Science at Norwich University, thank you for talking about this with us, too.
My pleasure, Jane.